This is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. I'm Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor. Zorba here to talk with you about what's new in healthy living, share some down-to-earth advice, and some great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. If you'd like to talk with Zorba, this is a great time to give us a call at 1-800-462-7413. Now, Zorba, along with our calls, some interesting topics to talk
about. Yes, digital diaries. Do they mess up your brain? You know, the stuff that I put on my iPhone or iPod, whatever you write, is that really keeping you from learning how to use your brain to memorize and execute? Good question. Does it make us dumb?
And what else?
Does it make us dumb? Well, calories, food calories. Post the calories and people will lose weight. Wouldn't that be great? Hey, I didn't realize
that. Well, I remember when that was the big deal. We want these fast food places to post their calorie
and
count.
As we post calories, who knows what happens? We'll discuss that because I know what happens.
And I'm guessing. what's our recipe?
Tom Yum Root Vegetable Soup. Tom, you'll love it. Tom Yum, it's named after you. Tom Yum. That's your name. Tom Yum is actually a Southeast Asian Vietnamese type of spice. It's a paste that you put in. Root vegetables are great this time of year. And, of course, soup is comfort food by definition.
And don't forget our medical myth buster coming up later in the hour. That number again, 1-800-462-7413. To the phones we go, Zorba. Let's help a listener now, if we can, from Chicago, Illinois. Hi.
Hello.
What's up?
Well, thank you for having me on the show. Mm-hmm. I have a question. About 6 months ago, I was involved in a lot of moving mattress activity, meaning that I had an old mattress, and I kept trying to lift the mattress up to get it back up on the slatboards, and eventually developed kind of some bilateral tennis elbow, which was aggravated for a while, but now has settled down to a low hum, but I just can't seem to get rid of it. And I don't really know what approach I should take.
Yeah. How long did you do this mattress shifting thing?
The slatboards kept falling down, so I'd get up in the middle of the night and have to lift this up. And this put it on for, I know, nice sleeping. It went on for about, I'd say, about 3 or 4 weeks.
Yeah, I know. I've done a little bit of mattress. I mean, that's not easy to do. It's frustrating.
No, not at all. Well, but I've got a question. You mean you'd be in bed sleeping and the boards would crash and you'd crash to the floor?
Yeah, the bed would fall through and I'd have to, exactly. That's exactly what
happened.
That's
a little bit hard to imagine or even believe, but we won't push you on the activity in the bed when the board fell.
Okay.
We'll leave that up in the air.
Okay.
So the real problem is your tennis elbow at this time. Well, mattress elbow. We'll call it mattress moving elbow. We are going to rename this Chicago mattress moving elbow. What are you doing for it? Any exercises, anti-inflammatories?
I've tried doing water aerobics with, the foam weights and, just some other activities. And anything I seem to do seems to irritate it.
Absolutely.
Seems to make it flare up.
Can aggravate it.
Yeah.
Okay, I've got a couple of suggestions. First of all, I want you to go at our website. We're going to put some tennis elbow exercises on there. So if you go to our website, zorbapastor.org, we're going to put tennis elbow exercises on there. They're exercises, rather, that you do with these rubber bands. Their one name brand of the rubber band is called TheraBand, T-H-E-R-A-B-A-N-D. We'll put that up there, too. There are a lot of other name brands, and basically you're working against resistance. And there's certain exercises that you're going to want to do, and then you often ice it either before or afterwards to sort of make sure that you can do that. You've got to build up the muscle, but then sometimes the tendon is painful. This is a tendon problem that you have actually aggravated the tendon that's ultimately attached to the skeleton. So number one, exercises. Number two, I recommend for 2 to 4 weeks you take a daily anti-inflammatory.
Okay.
I like naproxen. I think it's best. It's over the counter. Two generic Aleve twice a day is the best dose for that. Do it for a month. And the reason is you want the anti-inflammatory drug to sort of stay in your system to see if that will do it. And then number three, you want to look and see are there any other activities you're doing right now that are basically making it worse, because sometimes we still engage in certain activities. So you're going to want to sort of monitor yourself, diary it, and see if that'll work. Now, if that doesn't work, your doc can inject with a steroid, or sometimes a physical therapist can do something called electrophoresis, which puts a steroid into the skin with a little electric current. It has a numbing sort of feeling. It doesn't hurt. Or there is a drug called lidoderm patches, and these are patches of lidocaine that you put right over the elbow, and sometimes they will work. But those are all prescription things. I would do that second. The final question I have is, how's the mattress?
Well, the mattress is fine. What I ended up doing was buying a new bed frame with metal slats that were secured by bolts, so I have a good night's sleep.
Good plan.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for the call.
Thanks for talking.
800-462-7413. If you have a question for Zorba, callers are waiting, but a line is open now for you at 1-800-462-7413. To Jacksonville, Florida, we go next. Zorba, hi.
How are you?
Fine. How can we help you?
I was listening to you guys a few weeks ago on potassium. There was some guy that was, I guess he was like a bike rider, or he rode his bike or whatever, and he was having cramps and problems and stuff like that.
Sure.
Right.
And you guys were telling him to eat bananas. Well, I can't eat bananas. Bananas don't agree with me. And I was just like, oh, God. I mean, because I always hear like, okay, if you want to get some good potassium, eat bananas, and I cannot even touch them.
Yeah. Well, do you have any problems that you're worried about for which you would want to eat the bananas and get more potassium?
Yeah, because my job is somewhat physical. I do a lot of lifting and you know, I perspire a lot, so I have a lot of liquids that I release from my body when I'm at work.
Oh, yeah, and I think that is a good idea. I've got a question for you. So you can't eat bananas because you don't like them, or you can't eat bananas because of what?
I ate a lot of bananas when I was a kid, but as I got older, they come back up.
They come back up. So in other words, you don't like bananas. Now, bananas. There's a whole story about bananas. I mean, apple used to be the fruit of choice in America, and then in the 1900s, bananas kind of took over. And of course, they're the major fruit that we actually eat today. There are a lot of other fruits and vegetables that contain potassium, and there are other ways to get potassium. So first of all, and we'll put that on the website. Well, I'll give you a list on the website at zorbapastor.org, and I'll give you a list of potassium-containing foods, because there are lots of foods. Bell peppers contain a lot of potassium. Spinach contains potassium. A lot of different foods, and we'll give you the list so you can do that in a natural way. Now, if you don't like any of the fruits or veggies, chances are you're going to like it, so you'll be able to do it without a pill. There are over-the-counter potassium tablets. And what I would probably do, they're not as strong as the prescription strength, but they're good. What I probably would do is on the day you work, I take a tablet or two a day. That's what I would do. I mean, that's a simple way if you don't want to do it with the food. Mm-hmm. But frankly, it's better to do it with the food, and I'll tell you why. The foods that contain potassium are foods that are good for us. In other words, they're not just potassium. They have phytochemicals, they have micronutrients, they have vitamins and minerals. They've got other stuff besides potassium. And the longer I've been in this business, the more convinced I am that Mother Nature has done a tremendous job of putting a whole treasure chest of micronutrients in foods that we eat. And it's better to get it, obviously, from the food than from the pill. But if you don't like any of the veggies, I do it. You're going to find something on this list for sure.
Thanks very much.
Bye-bye. Yeah, I didn't know that banana was the number one fruit in this.
Absolutely number one. In fact, in Europe, it's 20% of all the fruit that's consumed is the banana. And I recently read a book called Bananas. Of course, it was also a Groucho Marx movie, but it was Bananas, all about the issues with bananas, where they're grown, and how and how America and Europe loves bananas.
Yeah, do you eat a lot of bananas?
I like bananas, yeah. I probably eat them four times a week. How about you?
Every day.
You eat a banana every day?
A banana a day.
What do you? Well, this is your dinner.
Well, I don't want to go into all that.
No, go for it. We eat a banana. What else do you have with it? You have nuts?
This is my supper.
Yeah. Oh, supper. So banana, tell us.
Yeah, some nuts, some orange juice.
Handful of nuts? What kind of nuts?
Yogurt, mixed. Uh-huh. No peanuts. Mm-hmm. Yogurt. Mm-hmm. Okay. And a little piece of a candy bar. Uh-huh. That's it.
Yeah, chocolate candy. Yeah. Chocolate, which is good for us. So if you look at your supper, your supper is actually well-rounded. Yeah. You've got omega-3.
We won't talk about my lunch.
No, we won't talk about
800-462-7413. Toll free, 800-462-7413. So, Zorba, do digital diaries mess up your brain?
You mean, do they make us dumb? Well, the best analogy is, how often do you use multiplication tables now?
Not very often. Never.
Yeah. And you had to memorize it, and it was a big issue in third grade and fourth grade. I mean, I was brought up in the pre-calculator area. I have to tell you, I have a trainer who I work with. She's absolutely marvelous. She trains. I train, that I need a personal trainer to stay on track. And I was talking to her, and I made a joke about a slide rule, and she looked at me, and she said, what's a slide rule?
Yeah, right.
And I said, I tried to explain it, and she couldn't understand it, and she had never even looked at a slide rule. Well, that was a big thing when I was in high school.
Hey, listen, I'm older than you are, and I don't have any idea. I mean, I know that there was one, but I couldn't work a slide
rule. No, but you know what it looks like. You know what it looks like.
It looks like a little thing that's hanging from the belt of an engineer.
That's right, slide rule. Yeah, with a little T on top of it.
Yeah.
But I remember when calculators came out, they said, this is going to ruin math because no one's going to memorize the math tables and kids are going to be dumb. Well, kids are not dumber today. They're actually smarter today because they do other executive functions and they leave the math to the calculator.
Yeah, well, how about these handheld digital
things? The same thing. Studies have shown that if you put things on a handheld calculator and if you tweet and if you look at Facebook and other things, there are a lot of things you no longer attend to, like telephone numbers. Mm-hmm. Who memorizes a telephone number today? The answer is not many of us.
Me.
Because we put
I
it
still
in our cell
phone.
Yeah, you
I don't
use your cell phone.
Yeah.
So you memorize it or you have it on a card, but then you free your brain to other activities, which may be either more interesting or more important.
There's for example, your personal telephone number is – no, I won't give it. Don't worry. No. But I do know it. I do know
it. You know mine. So there are a few numbers that – and I actually know your number too. But the point is these calculators and these devices don't make us dumb. It's that there's a certain number of things that we actually memorize. We tend to memorize things around emotional events, first of all. You know, our first time at the prom, you know, we went to prom, somebody dumped us, we had a really great time. Those are the big things that we memorize.
Yeah.
These other superficial things about life are really not important. So the electronic calculator does not mess up our brain. It frees our brain to attend to things that are much more important.
Is that your and maybe somebody else's idea, or is there good research to prove this?
And now we go to the next question.
800-462-7413. 1-800-462-7413. Our next caller, Zorba, is in Cincinnati, Ohio. Hi.
Hi, Zorba. Thanks for taking my call today.
Yeah, what's up?
I was discussing with a group of friends recently, and we were just talking about the best remedy for a hangover.
Uh-huh. So that means you've had a hangover?
Possibly.
Possibly.
Or
that's
two.
As far as we get. I love it, the non-committal answer, possibly. This is a theoretical question about a hangover.
Yeah.
That's
right.
Yeah,
right.
Never, it's like I smoked, but I didn't inhale. Remember the Bill Clinton?
Intellectual curiosity.
Intellectual curiosity. Yeah. That's exactly it. Fits within the same thing. Well, first of all, there is no ultimate cure at all for a hangover. I mean, there's some interesting questions about a hangover.
Mm-hmm.
One of the questions about alcoholics is whether or not they experience a hangover the same way that people who are not alcoholics experience it. In other words, I've had hangovers. I've had awful hangovers. And what they do is they tend to keep you from getting drunk because they feel so bad. And it's possible that 10 to 20% of the population, not possible, we know, do not often experience hangovers in the same way. So there is a genetic predisposition to have a bad hangover or not to have much of a hangover, which is why some people say, I went out drinking and I never get a hangover. And the answer is they don't. Mm. You know, they don't have that same thing. Now, a lot of times a hangover is actually a result of not only the withdrawal from the alcohol, but dehydration.
Mm-hmm.
So step one is to hydrate. Hydrate so that basically you're urinating every hour or two. That's what it is. You don't just drink lots. You make sure you're drinking so you have to go to the bathroom. So hydration is number one. Calories are number two. Something to eat because often when you have a hangover, You may have engaged in activities in the bathroom whereby you release the contents of your stomach into the porcelain goddess.
Yeah.
So you want to have some food in your stomach, you know, some food in your stomach with that. Yeah. And then you want to take something for the headache, a couple of aspirin, old-fashioned cure, works well, a couple of Aleve tablets, some ibuprofen, double the over-the-counter dose. That's how much you need. And the last thing is, don't make your day busy. Realize, hey, I got drunk. I had a hangover. I myself don't think there's anything wrong with going out and getting drunk. Drunk and driving is a different issue. But the next day, don't do much and realize you may be sick for 4 to 6 hours. So.
What do you think about coffee? Is that going to help or hurt or just not do much?
I think coffee is fine. I think coffee should be classified as a vitamin, basically.
Well, you
a
think vitamin. It should be classified as a medicine.
As a medicine. But actually, coffee is okay. Coffee is good. Coffee activates the brain. The reason why we drink coffee is it helps us concentrate. It's a temporary thing that helps. You know, in the movies, they always said, oh, you have a hangover, have a cup of coffee. That'll wake you up. It does wake you up, but you still have the side effect of the hangover.
Right.
Yeah. And the other thing is that some people get more of a hangover from different types of alcohol, and that's NOAID. So some people get a hangover from a vodka, and they don't get a hangover from beer, and they can drink one beer versus another beer. And these are the way things are brewed, and they're probably like a food allergy. So know your drink. It may not just be the alcohol. It might be what you're drinking.
Okay.
Yeah, and then you want to have a good time. Of course, this is only a theoretical conversation. Right. None of us, including the two boys who happen to be there in the production part of the studio, they've never had a hangover. I'm sure of it. Those men have never. And Tom, you've never. Well, you were in the Navy, so you must have had a hangover, Tom.
Don't remember ever having one.
Yeah, don't remember ever having one.
I want to thank the listener for the call. Yeah. Appreciate it. Yeah. And Zorba, what's that email address for those who want to respond to your saying there's nothing wrong with going out and getting drunk?
Zorba@WPR.org.
Oh, excellent.
Send me the emails.
Adam Friedrich, our program producer, will have a fun sifting through
bring
the...
Bring it on.
800-462-7413. Time for some listener tips now, Zorba. Not too long ago, you helped a young woman with sweaty feet. Well, our listeners chimed in with some advice of their own. A listener named Melinda suggests this trick, rolling some stick antiperspirant along the toe line. Another listener, Mary, is on the same track but suggests a different approach. She writes, it would help with the odor problem if she placed a drop or two of liquid thyme onto her shoe insoles. My husband uses it regularly and, quoting, Italian-smelling shoes are far better.
Liquid thyme?
Thyme.
T-I-M-E?
Yeah, T-H-Y-M-E.
Oh, liquid thyme. You mean like the spice?
Yeah, thyme.
Liquid.
Oh,
I've never seen liquid thyme.
Yeah.
I mean, I never thought about that. You mean so you would have Italian smell? What thyme is used in Italian cooking?
Yeah,
so your feet would smell like Italian food?
And that's better.
Now, do you believe? Give me a break.
Mary.
Wait a second. You're putting spices in your soul?
Hey, this
and that's
is not my
happen?
Idea. Don't argue with me.
I mean, the deodorant thing, the antiperspirant thing I can buy, but I don't know if I could buy liquid thyme.
Well,
liquid thyme, such an interesting phrase. Please, go on.
Let's see what you think about what Floyd from Brandon, Wisconsin says.
Okay, go for it, Floyd.
He writes, every night I put my shoes on my peat shoe dryer. The dryer emits a stream of warm air, which leaves the shoes to dry by morning. I could wear the same shoes daily if I wished without any sweater odor developing.
No, wait. There's one part of this that makes sense. If you do dry out your shoes, because I do that when I ski, the shoes will smell less.
Well, there you
go. He's drying it out in peat. It's a peat dryer.
I don't even know what that
is. Well, peat is like a bog. It's stuff that you put in a garden. I mean, so we've got one person who says your shoes should smell like Italian cooking. Another person who says your shoes should smell
like a garden.
I don't know about this. I'll go with the deodorant stick. I think that's the way to go. Or spray deodorant.
Oh.
You know something? It's clear that people think about smelly feet all the time.
I'm getting help from our producer. Pete is not like Pete Bog. It's a brand name of a dryer.
Oh. Oh, and it's a person's name, too. I like it.
Okay. No. Person's name has
how
one
do you know?
E.
How do you know?
This
how
is
do you know? How do you know? Maybe it's
want to share your tip with the show? We want to hear it. Send it in an email, too.
Zorba@WPR.org.
Our recipe is coming up. Some more of your calls.
Pete.
Maybe another email or two that Zorba will react to. Don't forget about our medical myth buster. Lots of great reasons for you to stay with us on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. From PRI. Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Again, that toll-free number, 800-462-7413. Right now, the recipe time, Tom Yum Root Vegetable Soup.
That's right, Tom Yum Root Vegetable Soup. Doesn't that sound familiar to you? Doesn't it sound great? Something you just want to just have, comfort food?
Well, I like veggie soup. Yeah, I have no idea what Tom Yum Vegetable Soup. Well, we'll find out.
Tom Yum. T-O-M space Y-U-M. Now, this is a paste that you can buy in Asian grocery stores. It's a paste that's used often in Vietnam, but it's also used in Malaysia and Laos. Mm-hmm. And it contains lots of spices to it. And for people who like a lot of hot, who like hot food, hot spicy food, such as, we'll say, hot and sour soup. Mm-hmm. This is a wonderful soup. And if you've never tried Tom Yum, this is your recipe.
Okay.
Do you like hot, spicy things?
Oh, yeah.
I've got to make this for you. This is a wonderful thing.
Good.
So we start out with one large can of chicken broth.
A large can of regular chicken broth?
Right. Well, I've gone to low-sodium chicken broth when I use chicken broth because there was an article in either Consumer Reports or Cook's Illustrated that looked at the taste of broth, and the low-sodium broths have more chickeny taste. Because it turns out salt is what you're often tasting in the high-sodium broth. So I've now gone to low-sodium chicken broth. And by the way, that's 46 ounces, I think 46 and a half ounces. You can use the veggie broth instead, which is really pretty good. There's some veggie broths that are good. But I like chicken, so I would use one large can of low-sodium chicken broth. One can of coconut milk.
A can of coconut milk.
Yeah. Now, coconut milk you find, again, in Asian cooking. It tends to have coconut oil in it, which is an oil that I think is very, very tasty. Mm-hmm. And so it's a large can. You can get low-fat coconut milk. I wouldn't recommend it because I don't think it's very good. Mm-hmm. And I'm now a believer in Michael Pollan's concept, which is eat the food that you like in amounts that satisfy your appetite. Mm-hmm. And so I think in our lives sometimes we go to tasteless food and we eat too much of it, and that's why we're fat, frankly.
Yeah, yeah.
So one can of regular chicken coconut milk.
Okay.
Tom Yum paste. Now, how much Tom Yum paste are you going to use? Well, I would start out with a tablespoonful. That's what I would do. We'll talk about how we use it. And then if you want more robustness, you make more. But I would start out with one big scoop tablespoonful of Tom Yum soup paste.
Oh, just one tablespoon.
That's all I would use.
What quantity
initially
do you buy this stuff in?
It comes in like 6-ounce containers. And once you open it up, you put it in the refrigerator. And it stays in the refrigerator for like 4 to 6 months. I mean, it stays for quite a long time.
Because if you're only using a tablespoonful.
Yeah, tablespoon. Yeah. Well, in our house, because my wife likes hot food, we use about a half a cup of it. We use quite a lot of it because she likes it, because I'll put it in and she'll go, boy, that's not that. It's not. She doesn't like it unless it's super hot. If it's super hot, she goes, I love your soup. Mm. But I'd start out with a tablespoonful.
Okay.
You have to do it to taste. One onion, roughly chopped.
An onion. What is roughly chopped?
Well, you don't have to dice it. You're going to just put it in chunks.
Kind of chunks.
Because onion is good to taste in soup.
Okay,
now these are the root vegetables. Half a rutabaga or a whole rutabaga if you want to. If you like rutabagas, which are called Swedes also, use a whole rutabaga.
Okay, a rutabaga.
Do you like rutabagas?
No, not much.
Not much, not much. Well, I like rutabagas. Yeah. Two parsnips.
Two parsnips.
Do you like parsnips?
Not
much, okay. Three turnips. Do you like turnips?
Not very much. Three turnips.
No, no. How about carrots? Three
I
carrots.
Love carrots. How many?
So,
how many carrots?
Three carrots.
Okay.
Okay. Let's make the soup.
Yes.
Heat the oven to 450 degrees. Now, here's how we make the broth. Combine the chicken broth or veggie broth if you want to, and coconut milk in a large pot. Add initially a tablespoonful of tom yum to it to taste. Start with a tablespoonful. Add the onions, cover, and simmer for 30 minutes. Mm-hmm. I whisk it. And the reason is the coconut milk has oil in it, coconut oil, and so you want to whisk it all together. And what you do is cook it for 20 to 30 minutes. Taste it. And see if you'd like it hotter. And if you want it hotter, put another tablespoonful, whisk it so that the tom yum is in there, and do it to taste. Mm-hmm. Now, in the meantime, cut the rutabaga, parsnips, turnips, and carrots into small cubes. Place on a cookie sheet. Spray lightly with cooking spray. I use an olive oil cooking spray. Roast in the oven until the vegetables are slightly charred. It's about 20 to 30 minutes. You want them slightly charred because they add a taste to the broth.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. You take the veggies now that are charred, put it in the broth, cook the soup for another 5 to 10 minutes, and you're done. And once again, correct the seasoning and decide whether or not you're going to add more tom yum soup. Now, you'll notice we're not adding salt, and the reason is tom yum tends to be salty.
Oh.
So if you decide you want a little salt, add it at the end, mm-hmm. but do not add it early on, or you will end up with a broth that's too salty.
Yeah, now this would be used as the soup course before another meal, I'm assuming.
Yes, yeah. You would use this as a coupe.
It's
sorry.
Not like chock full of stuff, so you wouldn't use it like a...
You would use this as a soup course with something else. If you wanted to chock full of something, you would put some meat or something in it. But frankly, the only other way that I've had tom yum, which I've had it as a full course, is where you throw in shrimp. And if you throw in shrimp, what you want to do is throw in pre-cooked shrimp, and you throw it in at the very end. So basically, pre-cooked shrimp, you're just warming it up. You put in shrimp, and if you wanted to have it as main course, open up a can of something, other veggies that you want to put in, such as Chinese vegetables, and put some Chinese vegetables in there, and that would also make it into a wonderful soup.
Now, I'm guessing there must be a way for listeners to get this recipe if they'd like.
I think so, and if they go to www.zorbapastor.org, you would be shocked. You can get this recipe. You can go through our archives, get lots of other great recipes, and you can sign up for our weekly podcast. That's zorbapastor.org.
+1 800 462 7413. That's the number you use to ask a question of Dr. Zorba Pastor. 1-800-462-7413. Listener joins in now, Zorba, in Blue Mounds, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hello, Tom. Hello, Dr. Zorba.
How can we help you?
Well, I noticed a few months back, well, maybe 4 or 5 months back, that my big toe on my left foot is partially numb all the time. And I'm wondering why. And I did notice that I sit on that foot a lot. I tend to tuck that foot underneath me when I sit. And I sit all day because I work in an office. And I'm wondering if that could have anything to do with it. I just find it very strange. And I'm just wondering if it's something I should be concerned about.
Now, you said you did notice. What was the eureka moment?
I don't know, maybe trimming my toenails or just rubbing lotion on my feet or something, and I noticed it, and it's been driving me nuts ever since.
You were rubbing that toe, and you could tell there was no feeling there.
Yes, and it's not like a pins and needles numb. It's like when you go to the doctor and they apply a local anesthetic. Uh-huh. It's just very numb.
Now I've got a question for you. I'm trying to picture you sitting in the office, tucking your feet under you. Do you sit on yoga mats in your office? Are you an office filled with yoga people who are sitting in front of their computer? How do you tuck your foot under your butt when you're sitting in the office?
I just before I sit down, I just put my left foot underneath my rear end, and then I just it's kind of underneath me.
Let me show you.
Tom is not going to show me how he's
excellent. Sitting.
Yeah, Tom, I want you radio listeners to watch this. Tom is now sitting. He's got his foot under there. Now, Tom, do you find that comfortable?
Well, I can sit here for a while this.
Well, you just
I've
go sit there
done
for
this
a while.
Actually, that's right. It's pretty comfortable.
Not so bad. Your tingling, your numbness is due to pressure.
Oh.
You're putting pressure on the nerve when you're sitting on the chair. So what I would recommend doing is sitting differently. And that may mean a cushion on the chair because you're used to, you know, a certain way that you're sitting. And you're just sitting in a very ritualized way. You're pushing on the nerve, and the nerve is basically shutting off. That's what it's doing. Pressure on nerves will get them to shut off. That's what happens.
It's permanent. I mean,
it's not necessarily permanent. The peripheral nerves are great, but they take 4 to 6 months to come back. They take quite a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they come back. What if I told you it took 4 to 6 years?
Well,
that would be worse. Now, sometimes they will come back in a few weeks, but a lot of times it takes 4 to 6 months. Stop sitting that way on the chair. Your mother never taught you to sit that way. Sit up nice and straight.
Okay.
Have a straight posture, and the numbness will go away. And you'll do a better job because you'll be sitting up straight in your chair.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, appreciate the call. Can I? I have my leg hurts.
You can get out.
Can I get out?
You lasted for about. You didn't last very long.
I thought that call would never
That's
end.
Right. That's right.
800-462.
It's not your way of sitting time. You're a radio jock.
1-800-462. Feet on the floor.
Feet on the floor. Eyes straight ahead.
Yeah.
That's it.
Attention to business.
That's right.
1-800-462-7413. A listener now, Zorba, in Liberty, Kentucky. Hello.
Good day, gentlemen. How are y'all?
Fine. How can we help you?
Well, I have managed to do a few things to kind of improve my health over the last few years. I lost 130 pounds. I didn't use any drugs or surgeries.
Congratulations.
Oh, thanks. One of the things that I want to do now is I want to quit smoking. I have a 14-year-old. Rather set a better example for him than something as foolish as smoking.
Mm-hmm.
I want to lose the smoking habit, but I don't want to gain the weight back. And, I already exercise. I eat mainly foods that are either naturally low in fat or fat-free as much as possible.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I do break over. But any suggestions on, not just for me, but for anybody who might be listening who's thinking about doing this, good ways of breaking that nicotine chain and, a good way to start out exercising without hurting yourself.
Absolutely. I've got some very specific ideas. First of all, a new study recently came out that looked at a combination of the patch and the nicotine lozenge. I said lozenge right, Tom,
yes.
So we won't have the grammar police on there. But they looked at a combination of the patch and the lozenge and found that it was dynamite, that it was absolutely awesome, that it had tremendously high quit rates when people put on a nicotine patch. You start out with a 21, then you can gradually go to a 14 and a 7 and use the lozenge through the day.
But
so
the
you
question
get
is about
level.
Weight loss or weight
well, no,
gain, I mean,
no, no.
Weight gain.
One of the issues with weight gain is not just smoking, but nicotine. There's evidence that nicotine may be the issue, and when you have higher nicotine levels in your bloodstream, you may not gain the weight back. Part of the issue is, you know, when you stop smoking, you're going to want to do things with your hands.
Mm-hmm.
I congratulate you on your weight loss. You're right to not smoke with a child in the house, because if you smoke around kids at all, if they know you're smoking, they're more likely to smoke and start. If they know you quit, they're more likely to quit. But your goal with quitting, you can use one of the drugs, such as bupropion called Zyban. Excellent. It works. It's an antidepressant. It has some side effects, but it's a good drug. Or you can use Chantix, the new kid on the block. Excellent drug. Has some side effects, nightmares and other things, but 90% of the people tolerate it. Or nicotine replacement, which I now think may be the first thing to try. A combo of the lozenge and the patch, and that's the way to go. Then the next thing is, you don't want to gain the weight? You got to pay attention to what you're eating. Exercise, like you said, any exercise that you'll do on a regular basis is your exercise. There's not one that's better. It's you've got to do something, and you've got to read those labels so you don't gain the weight. So kudos to you, congratulations, and good luck on your quest.
Thank you so much, sir, and you guys have a good day.
Thanks. We really appreciate the call. Thank you very much. Before we leave the recipe segment, Zorba, you've got a few small recipe-related finds from the Zorba Pastor on Your Health Grammar Police. The first one comes from Deputy Aaron in Knoxville, Tennessee, who caught something when we were discussing a recent vegetable recipe. She quips, "You mentioned a vegetable medley, which I believe you meant medley. I do believe that medleys of vegetables are wonderful. I also believe that medley is two syllables."
You mean medley, not medley?
Yeah.
Medley, like smedley.
I don't
smedley.
Know.
Medley.
Yeah.
Okay. That's it?
That's it.
I think that's a penny. In the fine book. I don't call that a high fine. You said it's a fine. I'll put a penny in the box.
Okay.
That's a penny.
I call
medley,
it a deal.
Medley.
I think.
But it may be a Midwesternism. How do you pronounce medley?
Medley, like everybody else in the world.
And I said medley.
Medley, apparently.
Yeah, my mother probably said medley. You don't remember much at times.
We'll call it a nickel fine. The second citation comes from Marie in our Alabama Bureau of the Zorba Pastoral. And deals with your common recipe closing. Now, I'm going to I'm going to take issue with Marie on this.
Okay.
And I'm going to come to your defense.
Oh,
but
great.
Let's
I've got
it.
You on my side. Ho-ho, way to go, baby.
This deals with your common recipe closing of bon appetit.
Yes, bon appetit.
She writes, "You have a good humor about the grammar police, or I wouldn't dare say this, but you mispronounce bon appetit. A final T is silent in French.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
An E on the end would allow the consonant to be pronounced. Mm-hmm. Feminine forms of a word have the final E. The reason the final N on bon is heard is the following word starts with a vowel, and it would be difficult to say, well, this is all right, without the N sound. Think of Petite Larceny and Julia Child, and you'll get it right."
Well, I never. That's why language is not my strong suit. That's why I didn't go into
language. Let me tell you why I'm coming to your defense.
Yeah, please,
I've recently returned from a trip to Paris.
That's right.
With my lovely wife, who is very well tourist oriented in the French language. She does a very good job as a tourist in France. Uh-huh. I, on the other hand. Well, you know. So we're together, and every time I try to use French, she constantly corrects me, pronounces the word right after I've said it in the correct French manner, and it just really burns me up. So when I hear somebody say bon appetit, no, you should say bon appetit. I say, well, I'm not going to tell you what I say. Anyway, if you're one of the cadets hoping to join the Zorba Pastor and your health grammar police, send us an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
We have some more interesting research coming up, more of your phone calls, and our medical myth buster. Stick around here on Zorba Pastor and Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Again, the number, 1-800-462-7413 if you have a question for Zorba. But before we're back to the phones, remember years ago there was all this to-do about fast food restaurants and we should post the calories in the food, and that would make us all healthier. Well, now we've actually taken a look at this situation with the calories posted in the restaurants. How's it turned out, Zorba?
Well, do you see a lot of thin people walking around the country right now? I mean, just use your eyes. Yeah. Are we getting thinner or are we getting heavier? And the answer is we're getting heavier and heavier and heavier. And a good example of this is Subway. Subway has a promotion, $5 for a footlong sub. And guess what? That's what sells, the $5 for the footlong sub, not the calories.
We aren't paying attention. What's this study?
Well, this particular study looked at a couple of neighborhoods. And they looked at neighborhoods and posted calories. And they found some interesting things. They found, for instance, that in poor neighborhoods, the calories really took a total backseat to value. In other words, how many calories do I get per dollar? I mean, it's a value issue, and that's what drives it all along.
Well, no surprise whatsoever.
No surprise. And if we look, by the way, generally at eating, fresh fruits and vegetables cost more money than carbohydrates and fats. And so on the whole, fresh fruits and vegetables then become an economic issue. And if you're looking to stretch your food dollar and you don't have the money, well, you don't buy perishables. But they looked at a variety of changes to see whether or not people actually were paying attention to calories and then ordering lower caloric things. In the end, it was very, very disappointing. Only half the people in the state of in the city of New York where this is on, 56% of the chain store customers, that's mm-hmm. what they looked at, yeah. even saw that, even knew that there was caloric information there.
Yeah.
In other words, they didn't even see it. Why? Because you go in and you look at the menu and you look at the price and you look you want to have. And then only 15, if you look at it, only 15% bought food with fewer calories, and it was only 100 calories less. So, in other words, people just giving people the information is not enough to change behavior.
Yeah, no, I totally understand. Now, do you ever go to fast food places?
Oh yeah, I go to fast food places.
Yeah, I do. As
I you go to fast food? Do you pay attention to calories?
I'm getting better.
I pay
no attention whatsoever. Yeah, yeah, but I'm starting there. I'll give one of them a plug. Yeah, Wendy's.
Yeah.
Now you can get a which I get a chicken sandwich, a spicy chicken sandwich with a baked potato instead of French fries.
Well,
now, that's good.
But those are the changes that count. A baked potato, a medium sized, small to medium sized baked potato is 80 calories. Okay, take the equivalent around and make it into a French fry, and it's probably about 200 calories.
Uh-huh.
So those little changes are the things that really make the difference. So what I would say is know the calories, make a small step, and that will get you to lose weight, which is your goal.
1-800-462-7413. On we go with a listener now in Nashville, Tennessee. Hello.
Hi, Tom and Dr. Pastor. Thanks for taking my call.
We appreciate the call. How can we help?
Well, I've been in the Nashville market about 3 years. Enjoy your answers to some of the quirky questions. I think I have my own. My wife, whom I've known for about 20 years, either she claims not to be dreaming or she does not remember her dreams.
Hmm.
Where I wake up every morning and I say, "Did you have a dream last night?" And she says, "Nope, did you?" And I can rattle off some humdingers and says, "You know what? If I don't dream or if I do, I'm glad I don't remember those."
Hmm. And she never remembers any of her dreams?
No. I mean, she said maybe on one hand she can remember some nightmares over the course of her life, but when she wakes up, a thing. And I know that she's dreaming because I can kind of feel her twitching in the bed or just kind of whimpering or something. So I think she is dreaming because I think we all dream, but she doesn't remember it.
Well, she is dreaming. There's no doubt about it because when you look at REM sleep and if you wake people up at the right time and you query them in sleep labs, a lot of men and women don't remember their dreams. But in fact, in a sleep lab, if they're awakened at the right time, you can awaken them in the middle of a dream. We don't tend to do it. By the way, your wife, my wife, sama-sama. It's the same thing. My wife goes, "I never dream at all." And now in the middle of the night, she'll be mumbling or talking or saying something. And then, you know, and sometimes I'll even wake her up because she'll be kicking me in the bed. And I'll give her a shove because she's kicking me in the bed. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to be kicked. And then morning she'll say, she doesn't remember at all. She doesn't remember the dream. Now, this isn't bad. We know that dreaming is an extremely important part of brain hygiene, if you will. We don't understand what it is, but we do know that if you don't dream and you keep people up, that they start having dreamlike states during the day. Nobody knows really what dreaming is for. But not remembering the dream itself isn't necessarily a bad thing. But a couple questions. Is your wife on any medications at all?
She's on Max for migraines, but that's maybe only been within the last few years.
Okay. So this is a daily pill or just a pill when she gets her migraines?
It's a daily.
Okay, that can affect her sleep.
But she wasn't dreaming, she thought, for all those 18 years before that.
That's right. Your wife is quirky. That's what it is. I pronounce this quirky wife syndrome, and she's quirky. But there's nothing wrong with it. She has a restful sleep in the morning when she wakes up?
Yeah.
Good. So,
and I've threatened to wake her up, you know, when I hear little sounds and, you know, rattle her and say, you know, but I obviously think better of it because I don't want to be blackened and bruised in the middle of the night.
No, I think you ought to wake her up once. I think you should wake her up and say, "What are you dreaming?" And prove to her. Now, I don't know what the downside is, though. Mm-hmm. Prove to her that she's having a dream, but I don't know if she'd be really happy. You know, we wake up often from these nightmarish dreams. I dream vividly and, you know, some of the dreams are good and, you know, some of them are not so good. So, well, good luck. Good luck to your dreamy household. What's your wife do for a living?
She's a stay-at-home mom. She's got 4 kids.
Well, how do you have time to sleep if you have 4 kids at home? That's the difficult time. But, well, good luck to you.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Yep. You're welcome. Appreciate the call. Thanks a lot. 800-462-7413. Zorba, let's get to our medical myth buster now. Today's myth deals with sight or lack thereof. Now, there's a long-running claim that when someone loses sight, their other senses improve. Is this a myth or is it true?
Well, the answer is it is not a myth, but it all depends on when the actual loss of sight occurred. It's not a myth at all.
Really?
It's not a myth at all. If your sight, if you lost sight from birth, if you were blind from birth, then you localize things and your sense of smell, your ability to localize things through sound, appears to be much more intense. And parts of your other brain begin to take over from your visual cortex. And actually, functional MRI studies have shown that there are parts of your brain and your visual cortex that actually light up, even though you don't have any, you're not actually, you know, you're blind. You may be blind at birth because, you know, you have a problem with the globe of the eye or so on. But if your blindness occurs after the age of 10, around 10 or 11, about the time, you know, that even language starts, the ability to learn a new language starts to drop precipitously, you're not any better than anybody else.
Oh.
In other words, it's got to really be from birth. If it occurred after the age of 2, you're as good, but you're not as good as somebody who had it at birth. So birth to 2, big issue, big parts of the brain, major development in the brain. We know the visual cortex is really doing lots of work, and the visual cortex will then take over some of the work of the auditory cortex. From 2 to 10, a little bit better. You're still going to do better than the average person, but you get blindness after the age of 10, you're not any better. So, you know, you often see this in movies where somebody is blind and they're able to tell where somebody is and they're able to smell
better.
But the
other senses get, yeah, yeah.
But the answer is you pay more attention to those other senses. They're much more important. And your brain, of course, is just as active, but it has to occur at a young age to work. So it is not a myth. It is true, but not for everyone who has blindness.
Pretty interesting. If you sense there's a myth out there that you'd like Zorba to bust, just send it to the show in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
Our telephone number is 800-462-7413, and our next listener is in Jacksonville, Florida. Hello.
Hello there.
What's up?
I have nightly leg cramps, and it's very difficult to get a good night's sleep because I'm constantly, my legs are constantly cramping. And I was wondering if you had any solution to this problem. I eat a banana a day because somebody said you have to have, you don't have enough potassium. And I've been drinking tonic water because it has something in it that's supposed to be good. I guess it has potassium in it.
Quinine.
That's the word. That's
right.
It.
Quinine.
And I've been trying to exercise my legs more, but it doesn't seem to help.
When you go to bed, what time do you go to bed at night?
Oh, about 11:30, 12 o'clock.
11:30. You do any exercise during the day, earlier in the day?
Yes, I try. We have an exercise course in our subdivision, and there's pedaling, and I do a lot of the pedaling, and I try to get some walking in during the day.
Okay. When you're sitting down, do you have trouble with your legs moving a lot?
No.
Okay. So you're not fidgety at all when you sit down.
No.
So where are the cramps that you get? Where are
in
they?
In the calves.
In the calves.
They're calves.
After you go to sleep, before you go, you have trouble getting to sleep because of the cramps?
No, I can get to sleep. It's when you start stretching during the evening.
Okay.
Stretch and I point with my toe.
Point with your toes.
And
then you get the cramp, right, as soon as you point with your toes.
Exactly.
Your bed covers, heavy, light. Tell me about the bed covers. What do you have in the bed?
Heavy.
That's the problem.
Oh, really?
That's the problem. You need lightweight bed covers. What's happening is it's causing a spasm to occur. Your leg is straight out. You're pushing down, and you're causing a cramp with heavy bed covers. One of the ways to treat this is some people, if they're severe, they actually put what's called a bed cot, which basically lifts the covers out from underneath your feet.
Those things, by the way, are hard to find.
Yeah, they're hard to find, but they're not impossible.
You can probably get them on the internet.
Not probably. You write down bed cot and you'll find it on the internet. It's a newfangled thing, Tom, but they actually exist.
I've seen it. Yeah.
Of course you've seen it, and all you have to do is Google the right words, and Amazon has has it, and it's probably $59.95.
Google
is a verb.
Okay.
Google is a verb. Come up with that. iPod, iPass, Google. But anyway, light covers are your answer. Vitamin E may work. It's a supplement that some people say will work. It doesn't do much. Quinine was an old-fashioned remedy. The feds got all the quinine pills out of the market because they said it was bunk. It was an old doctor's tale, not true. Potassium may work. I doubt it, but it's usually bed coverage. You need a soft, fluffy down cover or something, or a sheet, but a down. Well, you're in Florida. You might not need down. But you need something that is soft and fluffy. That's what you need. You need soft, fluffy bed cover so you can move your feet, and the weight on the foot does not push down on the foot to cause the spasm. That's your answer.
You are brilliant. I never even thought of that. I thought for sure it was diet or lack of exercise. But I can see exactly what you mean.
That's exactly it. So
terrific.
You see you can change in life, can't you?
That's right. Absolutely.
Thank you for your call.
We appreciate it.
Right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And before we step away for the week, Zorba, let's stop by the Zorba Pastor on Your Health inbox for our latest edition of Stump the Doc. Today's question is a little sensitive and comes from an anonymous female listener in our audience. She writes, "My husband sneezes when feeling like being intimate. He has always done this. We've been married for over 20 years. Is this unusual?" she asks.
Well, there is erectile tissue in the nose. The nose has erectile tissue in it.
You're saying this connects?
It actually connects together, right. Shocking as it is, but there's erectile tissue in the nose. And undoubtedly, when the hormones are going through his body and he's being intimate, sex, but we don't say the word sex on public radio, sex.
Right.
But when he's being intimate, basically he's probably stimulating the erectile tissue. There are a number of things that happen. Your breasts engorge, male and female breasts engorge. When you're being intimate, you flush. There's a flush response where you actually have flushing in your skin, and among other things, you can then become stuffier in your nose, and for some people, it's a sneeze. So, as long as it doesn't interfere with the acts of intimacy, it is okay.
Mm-hmm. Well, if you want to shake at Stumping Public Radio's favorite family doc, send your questions in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
Zorba, we'll see you next week.
Stay well, Tom.
If you missed anything during the show or just want to download our recipe podcast, visit us on the web
at zorbapastor.org.
Don't forget you can call us anytime at 800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. Wayne and Garth, otherwise known as Brad Kohlberg and Adam Friedrich, are the two burnouts responsible for this hour. Party on, Brad. Party on, Adam. Our executive producer is Adam Friedrich, and our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidran. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Tom Clark, hoping you'll join us for the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
Copies of today's show are available through the radio store at 800-747-7444. Ask for program number 1114Z. More on healthy living, including heart-healthy recipes, podcasts, show archives, and listener feedback, is available online at zorbapastor.org.
PRI, Public Radio International.